Hey, welcome back to this roundtable series. We are so excited to kick off this conversation. We have a lot of really great panelists today. A couple of reminders on our ground rules. Today, we are having a discussion. This is a topic that is hotly debated online, in coffee shops, wherever you hang out. But just remember, there are no brands here. This is not sponsored. These are just real people having real conversations. And I'm so excited to introduce you to our panel. So first up, let's meet Rob.
Hey, Alyssa, thanks so much for having me. I'm Rob Durant. I'm the CEO of U.S. Operations for the Institute of Sales Professionals. And fun fact about me, I started my career with the Walt Disney Company, where I spent the first 10 years of my career. And as you may know, the Walt Disney Company is known for inventing the field of customer service. That said, I was tricked into my first sales role. I'll tell you more about that later if it comes up.
All right. As if one Rob wasn't good enough, we had to double down and have double the Robs today. So I'm going to invite our next guest to the stage. Welcome, Rob number two.
What's up? Thanks, Alyssa. Yeah, two Robs don't make it right, is what somebody told me once. My name is Rob Zambito. I am a three-time customer success leader. Now I'm a full-time customer success consultant. I've worked with about 30 companies helping build and scale their customer success teams and have a small team of people now doing everything from consulting to recruiting to, RevOps contracting and all everything, basically everything under the customer success umbrella. Typically with early stage companies, usually around seed through Series B. And fun fact about me, I have a funny allegiance to Planet Fitness. I've been to 101 unique Planet Fitness locations. And on Tuesday, I'm supposed to actually get interviewed on the news about this, actually. So we'll see if that actually happens.
Okay, don't I got to ask a question. Yet. Have you ever had the lunk alarm pulled on you?
Yeah, just to force me to leave.
They were like, you've been to too many. It's time to go.
Yeah, I don't think it was because I was making too much noise as a lunk. For those of you who don't know, that's someone who just the obscene person at the gym is the lunk.
If you just are on TikTok and you just search like Planet Fitness lunk, you'll see some really incredible behavior.
It's the best. The whole thing is just, it's such a funny experience being at Planet Fitness.
I love it. I've been there a couple of times. So we'll get right into it. What is your hot take specifically as it relates to the big question of the day? Should the CSM carry a quota?
Rob, you want to start us off?
I think I'm going to defer to you, Rob. Go ahead.
Okay. So as a sales professional for the last 20 some odd years, I can say without a shadow of a doubt, I absolutely, most definitely believe that the CSM should not carry a quota.
I feel like that is a relatively spicy take, though, because I swear to God, I open up a LinkedIn post and it's like, oh, CSMs are dead and they're now just account managers. And like the conversation is happening around the idea that CS shouldn't exist or never really existed in the first place. So, you know, why is it that you think that way, especially when it seems that the general conversation is trending in a different direction?
Sure. So as I told you, I started my career with the Walt Disney Company, and in one of the roles I was in their call center, a customer service representative for their travel division. And I learned very quickly there that you have to justify your existence in business, whether you're a CSM, whether you're a marketer, whether you're sales, whether you're an accountant. If you are a cost center and not a revenue driving member of the organization, you are going to be cut, because what is the business's responsibility? Reduce cost as much as possible. So I am all for justifying my existence and proving it with data as a sales representative, those numbers come very easy. As a sales representative, those numbers are made public to everyone within the organization. Whether that's right or wrong, that's a different debate. But as a customer service representative, how are you justifying your seat?
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and pause this for a second and bring in our marketing panelists. So we're going to welcome Brooke to the stage. Brooke, if you would just introduce yourself, that would be so great. Hi, Brooke.
Hi, Brooke Foley with Jane Agency. I had trouble getting in technologically, so that's on me. Great to be here.
The joy of technology, right? It's only great when it works.
Correct.
So the question at hand is, you know, should the CSM create a quota? And maybe, Rob, to your point, we need to have a real discussion about what it means to carry quota versus what it means to be accountable to a number.
And that was my whole concept around answer to the question, should the CSM carry a quota? No. They absolutely need to justify their existence. They need to prove their worth. They can even drive revenue through sales. But when you have them carry a quota, their role, their mindset in their role changes significantly enough that it can impact what they're doing in their role. And I don't want that.
So if it's not a quota then, Rob, what are you seeing in customer success when you do consulting? And we did discuss this is going to get hard with multiple Robs. So Rob Zambito, what are you seeing in customer success when it comes to carrying a quota, like, or not? What can we track if we're not allowed to track quota?
All right, cool. I'm glad you kicked it my way because I spent 2 summers in high school growing up at debate camp. And I'm challenging myself to disagree with Rob Durant. Now, I don't disagree with Rob inherently, but I'm going to do it for the sake of the audience, at least here. So here's my spicy take. My spicy hot take is that companies don't care about customer value as much as they say they do. They typically don't. And they care about revenue. They care about value only because value is a vehicle to attain a revenue outcome. Or as Rob said, a cost management outcome. And the fact that people need to justify their numbers is very much true. So what I've typically seen is that it's interesting. You look at the CSM role. The CSM role has gone through this interesting cycle where it feels like we've kind of just got back to where we started. You know, CSM roles emerged out of this combo sort of account management and support roles, but they really were responsible for revenue outcomes. And then we went through, in particular over the last like few years, we went through several years where there was like money left and right for every company to burn on things like it, you know, what are a lot of programs that are seen as like superfluous programs now. And customer success has kind of come full circle now to being a function that has to prove its viability, as Rob said, but to do so in a way that customer success shows itself to be a growth engine, that it's not that it's a money generating function and not just a cost minimization function. And so I think the reason for that is that there's like a lot more accountability when you look at quotas as opposed to, you know, sort of floppy other KPIs and OKRs like, you know, time to value and net promoter score and usage metrics and customer health metrics. So I think there's a lot of good reasons. Like number one is that quotas are a bit more concrete. Number two is that quotas can come in, well, rather I'm going to broadly say like financial incentives can come in different forms, not just quotas, but like SPIPs can come in the form of bonuses as well. Like I'm going to take those to my side of the court, if y'all don't mind. And I think it's really good for a CSM's well-being too, to have like a financial metric tied to their goal, because it can be quite a driver. And there's some interesting research behind that. There's research on both sides of the table, but I'll pause there because I'm sure we're going to dive into it.
So Rob, I want to be clear. I don't think that CSMs should not drive revenue. They absolutely should. And I've, as a sales leader, spent a lot of time teaching customer service people how to do that exactly, because I understand the challenge for most sales, customer service people to get there. I just have issue with the quota aspect of it. If you recognize as a CSM, if you recognize an opportunity to drive revenue, you absolutely have a responsibility to the company, but more importantly, you have a responsibility to the customer to do that. I tell my customer service people, the difference between a great salesperson and adequate customer service comes down to one thing. Customer service people, mere table stakes for customer service. You ask questions, you uncover the root cause issue, you present solutions so that your customer can make an informed decision. We don't lie, we don't cheat, we don't steal, and a lie by omission is still a lie. But what customer service people cannot bring themselves to do typically, and I can say this definitively because it was me as well, what a customer service person cannot bring themselves to do is exactly what makes an outstanding salesperson. Outstanding salespeople ask questions, uncover the root cause issue, present solutions so their prospect can make an informed decision. There's just one more thing that outstanding salespeople do that most customer service people cannot bring themselves to do. Care to guess?
I've had Rob on the podcast, so I know the answer.
I'm waiting for it.
Ask for the sale.
Yep. Yeah.
It's not overcoming objections. It's not a soft close. We've had this discussion. We've identified the issue, and I happen to have the solution to that. But I know why customer service people typically cannot do that, because I was doing.
So let's expand this conversation, right? Because Brooke has an entirely different world, right? She's not in sales. She's not in customer success. So Brooke, tell us a little bit. First, tell us a little bit about your background. And then I want to hear your hot take, because this is kind of a different world than what you work with in the agency world.
Right. And when you asked me to participate on this, I hesitated at first. And you're like, no, I want your take on this. So I come out of originally large agency awareness, brand strategy, tech, MarTech, et cetera. And today I have a brand strategy company. We focus solely on helping organizations codify and then leverage the 10 assets of their brand platform, which sounds like a lot of marketing jargon, but every business has those 10 assets actively at play every day, all day long. And you just, if you don't have a good handle on those 10 assets, you're either missing opportunity or at great risk. And that's true for every one of us. And it shifts as the world around you shifts and your audience shifts and your supply chain shifts as well. So we focus on helping people codify those 10 assets. And it comes down to a lot of our clients over time have had to have brand platforms that held up in a court of law. We are known for developing evidence-based. So we usually ground or brace ourselves inside of data and evidence. So as I'm listening to both of you, and I can see both of your points of view, and I can see things that I have seen over time in the clients that we've worked with and consulted with, but two standout examples to me of clients that took customer service or customer success management to a different place, had actually more to do with values than data. And I thought I could just quickly explain one of them. It's a large 3PL, if you ever haven't heard of Echo Global Logistics. We worked with them, I think at this point, it's probably almost 10 years ago, but they had... they were looking to rise in rank and value, and they enabled their customer success managers, their account managers, and their sales team to do whatever it took to make sure that their customers' expectations got met from point A to point B. And they empowered them through three or four different levers, and those levers themselves had metrics. And what they did is they basically took 1,200 people and turned them into an active customer care and sales force at once. And so what they did is they rooted it in values, and they did it really, really well. And they reaped that reward across the board. When we went in and did customer interviews, they cited the exact strategy. They could tell you exactly who took care of them and how. And they talked about it in terms of their own personal success. When we talked to the internal facing teams that supported the sales and the customer success managers, they cited who of those people worked hard and how the clients responded. Like, it was as though people were unified and galvanized over values that led to levers that led to financial outcomes that they themselves could see as well. And so I just thought that was an interesting take on it, because I don't think it's any one thing or any right way, but it's how you as an organization choose to leverage your brand and your values, and then turn those activities and actions and roles into things that could be measured for outcome.
But how do we do that, like, to play devil's advocate for this entire conversation?
Well,
right? Like, how do we do that without making it something that could be what I'll call, like, without the swish, right? Because if I'm in sales, I either did my job or I didn't, because my job is to bring in deals and close deals and bring in new logos, bring in new customers. If I'm in marketing, my job is to bring in leads, to create campaigns, to build awareness. And I feel like sales has always had this really great way to prove that they are bringing value and that they're driving revenue. Marketing is heading in that direction, right? When we have, like, our marketing qualified leads.
It depends on the personality and the role.
Right. But yet we have this esoteric revenue role at the end that sometimes gets slotted into customer support, sometimes is a strategy role, sometimes is a revenue role, sometimes is an account manager wrapped in a different title, and sometimes is someone who's just trying to get paid to have coffee and talk about their dogs with customers. And, like, where does the line end between not trying to create a dichotomy with your customer where it's transactional and being able to prove, as someone who wants to keep my job and not get laid off, that I am driving real value and real impact? And if you take my job away, then you're going to lose this very tangible thing that shows up on the CFO's report.
So the thing that I see companies lacking all the time, and it's so far lacking in this conversation, is the ability to wrap our heads around organic revenue, organic growth. So talk in terms of, you know, new sales or outside sales, inside sales, but we forget the value of organic sales. So, you know, I think the best case study I've ever seen about, so there's organic sales, and inside of organic sales is retention and loyalty, right? And what you're really talking about when you talk about customer success, once it's a new sales is closed, what you're really doing is talking about the everyday close that happens every time a client decides that they are still in love with you or not.
Right.
Right. And that's really what you're talking about measuring, because, there was a phenomenal case study for anybody who was involved in American Express in the 90s. They had the worst rating, worst reputation. Nobody wanted their card. And quite frankly, if you look at their agreements, even from that time, they were like, who would ever agree to that? And they were losing customers left and right. And what they did is they enabled the customer service team to do anything they could to win back a customer. And I will tell you that every client that we work with, from a brand strategy and a sales perspective, the most highest performing strategies are the win back ones. They're also the most painful and the most expensive, but they are the tightest long-term loyalty from there. And that's the faction of people that sits inside of the roles that you just talked about, and it gets underrated and under relegated. It's both of those things inside of most organizations. So If you can tap in and create organization and structure around organic retention and loyalty, oftentimes we relegate that to marketing, but that's actually sales. It's active sales.
Yeah. And I want to kick it over because you made a comment about like the win back being one of the best ways to build loyalty. But like, Rob, isn't having to do a win back in the first place like the antithesis of what customer success is supposed to be doing?
Me, Rob?
Yeah, you, Rob. See, this is why we can't have more than one Rob.
Yeah. Hey, I've been trying to make Zam happen, but no one's, I guess I'm not cool enough.
I'll call it now.
I got you, Zam.
Yeah.
Anyway, so is it the antithesis of customer success? Yes. But is it an entire part of the job? Absolutely. Like somebody needs to be there to win a customer back. In fact, you know, like I have a template library that I share with folks. It's about like 90 templates that I've assembled over the years. And usually the one that people go to first is the cancellation handling playbooks.
Right. So that's when playbooks. You're in an oh shit situation and you're panicking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you're in that situation, you need a playbook to say like, you know, red alert, we've got a customer who just submitted cancellation. Here's how we handle the cancellation. Here's how we notify management. Here's how we put together a concession plan. Here's how we maybe put together a win back strategy, maybe an exit interview, maybe also a win back strategy for if the customer churns 3 months from now, how we re-engage sales to win the customer back. I mean, really, I think I often call customer success teams rev defenders because that's kind of what they're supposed to do is defend revenue, right? So is it the antithesis of customer success? Yes, but it is like, yes, by the term customer success, because it's like customers not being successful. But I really liked Brooke's point that sometimes it's those customers that you win back who are the most loyal long term.
So I want to pick up on Zam, what you just said, and Brooke, what you were saying as
we're
well. Yeah, I told you I'd make it happen. If winbacks are so critical, if retention is so critical, if problem solving is so critical to the CS role, when do they have time to retire their quota? If you give me a sales quota, that's what I will focus on, and those other things be damned. And we just said how critically important they are to the organization. Penny Wise and Pound Foolish comes to mind.
I think that if you say to someone, we're watching your retention numbers for the purposes of understanding where the organization needs to improve. So a retention number goes up because something else is failing, right? Like I could be really great at retaining things and that's awesome and my numbers are going up, but that means that something wrong is happening in the organization, right? And to Zam's point, you know, it's the antithesis, yes, Alyssa's point too, but it happened. So I think if you were to say to somebody, We're recognizing and rewarding your retention numbers at the same level that we're recognizing and rewarding incremental or new sales, right? But we also are making a pledge or a promise that as your numbers and retention are going up, we're looking to make sure that we can reduce them, right? Like we're going to make a pledge to reduce that they're going to come to you. I, as a success manager, if that's the role I'm in, now I'm looking at both levers and both opportunities, and I know I have to focus on both, right? Because I need to demonstrate performance in one, and I need to hit a quota in another. But I'm being recognized for both.
If I can jump in, and
I'm sorry,
I think
I completely.
No. That's a really good point. So, like for me, I think of it as a matter of how you build that quota. So you can have a quota that pertains to net revenue retention, you know, so it can be some aggregate of customer retention and customer growth, which is how I typically recommend most customer success teams operate once they have the metrics to support that. A lot of really early stage companies, they may not have metrics to support that. But it typically makes a lot of sense to say like, as you grow as in a company, your growth corresponds and correlates pretty darn closely with that of the company. And so when the company wins, you win. And when you win, the company wins. So you start to see that, especially as you see people move up the chains and the management hierarchy as well. So I think that what I see often is that, like, the struggle people often have in that, it's not a closing problem. Like when I heard Rob mention, Rob Dare, you get Dare now. If I get Zam, you get Dare.
No mas. Roberto Duran, no mas.
If there's a closing problem, you have to ask yourselves why. Like, why can't customer success folks bring themselves to ask for the sale? It's usually lack of skill, lack of bandwidth, lack of interest, but most commonly it's lack of skill and lack of practice, right? I mean, sales teams get saddled with all sorts of resources to practice their strategies, their discovery strategies, their sales trainings, I've walked into rooms of salespeople just practicing with each other. And it's great. It's like one of the greatest team collaborative activities I've seen, but it doesn't often happen in customer success. So I don't think that customer success has a closing problem as much as a training problem and a value problem. To go back to something
I would wholeheartedly
you said, Brett,
disagree
back
with
to.
That. No
oh,
way.
Okay, let's hear it.
Let's hear it.
It's not about training. I have done training for CS teams. I have helped them understand recognizing opportunities. I have helped them understand closing. I have helped them understand teeing it up for sales to close. It's a philosophy. And I can say this definitively because it was my philosophy. As a customer service person, I was personalizing the sale. I cannot afford this. Therefore, you cannot afford this. Therefore, in an effort to provide you with outstanding customer service, I will not even insult you by offering it. And when I go in and teach customer service people, that is the worst thing you can do in terms of customer service. It's eye-opening. You want to cut a customer service person to the quick, you tell them they're providing bad customer service. You then explain making the decision for them, not treating them like the adult that they are, is bad customer service. What you want to do is allow them to decide for themselves. So it's not about, I don't know how to close. It's philosophically, I don't want to. Sales is bad. Sales is evil. Sales is yucky. If sales didn't screw up somewhere, we wouldn't even need customer service. That's the mindset.
So I'm actually going
to... Sounds like a hiring problem to me.
It is. I would agree. I'm going to...
Yes,
we have a comment coming in. We have a comment coming in, and I want to make sure that we get to it, because I think it is very relevant to the conversation that we're having right now. So the comment is, I've always worked on commercially responsible teams. I think the product or service should dictate the build of the customer journey. Some are more complex and require multiple team members for delivery. Others aren't, and the CS can manage service and commercial responsibilities. So I want to ask a different question. Maybe are we overgeneralizing in either direction, whether the CSM should or shouldn't have commercial responsibility? Is it more complex than that? Is there a different role who should have it? Or is it some CSMs, but not all others? So let's talk a little more in depth about, like, is there nuance there? Or either you're either revenue generating or you're resume writing, right? Which is it?
I think that what is essential and what that comment held inside of it was unique to the customer journey. So, you know, customer success management in home goods is different than customer success management in healthcare. So it very, very much matters what the journey is, and it needs to be thought through from the sales process, through brand strategy, into marketing, what someone's coming into the expectation to have, along the customer journey touch point, and where customer success management comes in post-sale, during sale, after sale, follow up. And so I think that that's a big part of how that system gets designed. So I would think someone like Zam would come in and say, look, across the board, these are the touch points that that success or failure happens. And here's how you risk mitigate that based on your brand promise, right? Because the brand promise risk mitigation of customer success is different in a QSR restaurant where someone's sitting right there and the service staff is responsible for mitigating that versus someone who's calling into a call center.
So let's go vertical too, right? Because we're talking about different groups, but I just saw a stat a couple of days ago from G2 that 62% of all CS executives now have a quota. Is it more that your executive level is going to have this quota, but it doesn't necessarily like roll down? Or like, where does the line draw between someone who is truly commercially responsible and on the hook for an outcome and someone who isn't?
So I want to pick up on commercially responsible for an outcome. Absolutely believe CS should. I took issue with the specifics, and maybe it was the narrow definition of the question that I was looking at. Should the CSM carry a sales quota?
Right.
And that's where I contend no. But all of these other metrics that we're talking about, all of these other revenue generating or revenue saving activities, I absolutely believe you need to be accountable. But if you give the customer service leadership a sales quota, they don't retire it. They have their people do that. So it trickles down. And I still contend that that's not where it belongs. We have other measures of productivity. We have other measures of revenue. It's really hard sometimes to measure the client didn't leave and never indicated that they were going to leave because they had such a great relationship with the customer service person when they called in. It's hard to measure the numbers that don't show themselves.
Right.
But those are the things that we're talking about.
But in like those strategic roles, right, where it's someone's job to make sure that you get the most value out of your purchase. Like, I guess maybe I can rephrase the question. Maybe it's not should the CSM carry quota, but like if the customers don't renew, if the company doesn't make its renewals message, should CS heads roll in the same way that sales heads would roll if we didn't make our income numbers, right? Because right now, I think that there is a little bit of like a, I want the benefit, the bonus, and the compensation of getting a revenue-related connection. I don't want the accountability and the ass kicking when the numbers don't go our way.
Well, I think that person, no matter what role they're in, should be fired. Like, I don't care what you're doing in a company. If you don't want accountability on the front and back end, then you're just there as a hobbyist.
And I'm seeing a little bit of that. I can't bring myself to say Zam. So Rob Zambito, can you?
This is going to seem for a second like I'm maybe like shifting sides, but other Rob also kind of did. So there's actually a lot of good research why that like heads will roll outcome is very, very negative for a customer success team. Now it's not specifically about customer success, but. My academic background is in psychology, and there's something called self-determination theory, which basically says that like extrinsic rewards do typically undermine intrinsic motivation. And it's usually most applicable to things that are like, creative endeavors. So things like if somebody pays you to make art, you're going to enjoy making art a lot less than if you just did it on your own, which is kind of interesting. So the question then kind of becomes like, is the nature of a CSM role and a customer success function in general, one that is kind of like more of a creative endeavor? Is the relational nature, the long-term nature, something that's more like a creative endeavor? Now, I just want to bring this back to the point. The point is, a quota might be a pretty exacting mechanism, and that like heads will roll mentality might be kind of dangerous for a team. But that was why, you might recall, I mentioned earlier in the conversation, there are ways to create team-wide accountability. Like, for example, having team bonuses, where the team kind of functions almost like if you've been to a restaurant and people clearly have like a pooled tip system. That's like a strategy that sometimes works for some teams. Or I think of it kind of like a football zone defense where it's like everyone's kind of got their zones. And then there's also spiff strategies, which can help motivate direct behaviors that a CSM does. For example, like for every referral you bring in or for every, you know, call it whatever activity you want to incentivize, there's a certain bonus that gets triggered based on that activity. So I would still categorize that as maybe not quota, but it is variable comp that can be quite motivating.
So, Sam, when you were talking about motivations, it reminded me of one of my favorite authors. Dan Pink wrote the book Drive. And I love pointing sales leaders to that book when they talk about increasing compensation and so on. Because within that book, he points to the fact that money is not the single greatest motivator. There are so many other aspects, and I encourage them to read it so that they can understand how to motivate their sales team. But when I'm in a meeting with sales leaders and customer service leaders, and I share that, inevitably the customer service leaders turn to the sales leaders and go, "See, I told you so." And that's when I say, yes, stop right there. Because Dan Pink wrote my other favorite book, which is To Sell is Human, in which he proves 9 out of 10 people are in the business of selling something. So it is that yin and yang that he's written about that our leadership is going through. It's not just about a sales quota, but there is something we are promoting to expand that word sale to influence. We want to have influence.
So I actually want to ask a next stage question, right? So if we're going to give any kind of like commercial metrics to the CS team, should their compensation reflect success on those commercial metrics? Specifically, hitting your quota means that you get some kind of bonus. There's some kind of reason for you doing that. So I come from a what I'll call a recovering seller. So I've spent, you know, the last 10 years, I was a reluctant seller, and then I became a full-throated seller, and now I'm a recovering seller is where I will put myself in. And so, like, my bonus structure was very much like I eat what I killed, and if I didn't sell something, I didn't eat that week, right? And so, as that was obviously money, not the full motivating factor, but it is a motivating factor for a lot of people. And like, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not working because I necessarily just want to, you know, do the job. I need the money that goes along with it too. So if I'm a commercially responsible in the broadest definition, I am tied to revenue. I can specifically tie my input, my success, my activities to some kind of revenue outcome. Should I be compensated as a CSM on those outcomes?
Are you talking about in terms of OTE? So in sales, when you go for a job, you ask, what's the base and what's the commission? What is the on-target earnings? And typically, sales is a 50-50 split. I've seen where marketing is an 80-20 split. I haven't seen a lot of splits in customer service. Is that what you're referring to? Or are you talking about customer service gets a salary, but over and above, that's ice cream on top?
Yeah, I'm talking specifically about the people who are in those more like active outreach. So like they go to you, not necessarily like you call in to get help, but the people who are out there and trying to build relationships, trying to ensure renewal. Like their entire job is to make sure you realize the full value of your tool, software, solution, service, whatever you purchased. And when it comes time for the renewal, what I see is that sales gets a long tail commission because it renewed. I consulted with Cisco and they were doing a comp plan for their sellers where they actually got a bigger commission on the renewal than they did on the initial land. And as a seller, I'm sitting here thinking like, I want to keep I want to keep that commission on the renewal. I don't want to share it with CS, but CS is probably saying, like, I did all the work to keep that customer, so I want a piece of that little pie that you've been enjoying.
I think that comes down to culture. And I know that doesn't seem like that's the place you would start on that one, but and it goes all the way back to recruiting. So if you have a team where you're going to create a metric for and a quota for the customer success person, then that person from the get-go has to be willing to live or die by what they do. So you talked earlier about the fact that you understood in sales that you would hunt and eat what you, you know, if you didn't kill, you didn't eat, right? The person who goes into that role from a psychological and physiological standpoint is different from an everyday mindset than the person who is about incremental change, monitoring, testing, improving. Like, there, it's just a different, like, sociological profile. And so if the question is, should they be compensated for what they're doing, then they should also be deal with the consequences of not meeting those quotas. And I think that's the hard part in the question that you pose. And this was one of the reasons why I was sort of like, I'm not an operational development person. I'm not sure I belong in here. But when you talk about it like that, it just comes down to, like, did that person sign up for that job and expect it to be that way?
Yeah.
And if so, then yes, that is how it should be. But I think the company needs to decide what works best for the company. Right. And I take it back to brand strategy. What's going to protect the financials? If motivating and incenting at the customer success manager level is going to create a better outcome long term, where both people get a compensation for it and the company retains its customer and still gets revenue, it sounds like a triple win. But if the customer success person wasn't prepared for the fact that if they didn't nail that they're going to get fired, then you have an internal culture problem.
And Brooke, I think you just nailed it. Rob Zambito, I think you're probably seeing this a lot. I'm seeing it a lot in customer success. People who 5 years ago got hired to really just focus on what's in the best interest of the customer are now being pushed into what I would call sales type roles. It is a hot, I think our last roundtable was literally like, is CS dead? Are you just an account manager now? And I don't know about you guys, but I feel like everything is dead on LinkedIn these days. sales is dead.
Being dead is dead.
Being dead is dead. Everything is dead.
Canceled is dead.
But one of the comments that is striking me from one of those old conversations is someone posted that essentially she got hired into a role that fundamentally changed over the 5 years that she was there, and what she was hired for and what she was actually doing had no reflection or bearing on what she was told. And it wasn't necessarily the fault of the company, because at the time they hired her for the role that they hired her for. She worked that role for a year or two, and then the marketplace fundamentally shifted and they shifted along with her. So what are you seeing in customer success? Are you seeing people getting that split where they get a commission and they get, I mean, you talked about spiffs, but like, are they getting compensated in the same way sales is for sales-based outcomes?
Yes, just to a lesser extent. So so that 80-20 ratio is typically considered a best practice, at least these days. I mean, for me, it's always been kind of a best practice, but a lot of companies trended away from it to just 100% flat salaries for CS teams, maybe with a bonus or something like that occasionally. But yeah, I'm more often seeing that there are, you know, there's an 80-20% or 80-20 split between base and OTE. And I do think a lot of CS folks are being pushed into sales just due to business circumstances, because primarily just because, at least in my world, in the startup world, the funding environments have so dramatically shifted over the last 2 years. If I go back to 2021, companies could afford to have a little extra bloat. And they didn't suffer the consequences until, you know, funding markets seized up quite a bit. And then that caused a lot of companies to think really critically, put customer success folks into a position where it is sort of like a grow or we can't afford this team anymore. So I feel bad for the person that you mentioned who was pushed into sales, but I also would encourage that person to think of the opportunity that's there around career development and around the potential defensibility and her role that she's building, that the next time, I mean, markets are going to boom and bust. This is not the last time that markets are going to boom and bust. And so if she takes the opportunity now to develop this skill set, it's going to make her even more resilient the next time this rolls around. That's at least what I've learned, I'd say the hard way, because I am a very reluctant salesperson, as I think many of us on this call have in some ways said we are, myself.
So I guess what is the, let's be really practical, right? We've talked kind of esoterically. Let's be really practical. If someone wants to explore the idea of figuring out what is the best fit for their brand, for their organization, whether that means carrying quota as a CSM or not, being 100% salary or not. So we're not going to pass judgment on whichever decision we're going. But what would be the first step you would have them take to start figuring out what makes the most sense for their organization? And I want to hear from everyone. So let's just go around the circle.
You know, I mean, 100% say talk to your team first. Find out what motivates them personally.
I would say start with alignment at your leadership level as it relates to financial goals. So I would start by getting those 10 assets codified. Sorry to be self-serving in that, but it is the best place to figure out where the weaknesses and the gaps are, where the holes in the dam of financials are. That stems all the way back to your internal and external customers. So I think if you're going to ask that question, the place to start is what do we know and what do we not know? What are we in control of and what are we not in control of as it relates to our brand overall? And then what do we need to do to be able to make sure we can ensure that?
I agree with her. That was better answer than mine. Thanks, Coach.
I'll pay a leader on the side.
For me, I'm also a big fan of science and start with why. So I would ask that leader to start with why. Why do you believe you need a customer service role? Do you have faith in your sales team that they're selling the right thing to the right people in the right fit? Do you have faith in your product that it's delivering what marketing and sales promise to the customer? Do you even need a customer service team at that point? Yes, you do. But why? What do you want from them? And if what you want from them is more revenue, maybe it's not customer service that you want. Maybe it's an account management team or an expansion team or whatever the case may be. But I want them to be crystal clear on why they want a specific customer service role before they move forward in hiring, because more often than not, it's because my competition has it.
Right. All right. I have two closing questions that I always close out these events with, whether it's a podcast or a roundtable. And so I'm going to put you all on what I call the hot seat. So you actually get a chance to shout out someone else who you think is really leading the charge. So considering all of the incredible thought leaders you have all had a chance to meet, who is leading the charge? Who is changing the way we build relationships with our customers, the way we keep them, and the way we continue to lead as expectations rapidly evolve?
I want to give a shout out to Kerry Cunningham at Sixth Sense, the number Sixth Sense. He is doing some outstanding things in terms of marketing research, and the MQL. I love what he has to say about that. TLDR, he does not believe in the MQL. And I love what he's putting out.
I love that.
I'll chime in. I would love to shout out a good friend of mine, Alex Turkovich, who runs a podcast called the Digital Customer Experience Podcast, formerly known as the Digital Customer Success Podcast. And it's all about ways to build really effective relationships with your customers through digital channels. That could be all sorts of digital channels, like particularly those of us listening who are in SaaS. It could be like in-app notifications. It could be email marketing strategies. It could be webinar strategies or scaled strategies. I mean, the interesting thing about Alex is I've never met anyone who's built his career on digital strategies and yet somehow is like the most just awesome human to human person to talk to. He's just so deeply empathetic. So I feel like he really, you know, he's someone I hold in the back of my mind as a role model, and definitely recommend checking out his show if you haven't already.
Yeah, Alex is good. He was on my show a couple of months ago, and he's very, very smart. Lots of good things, but you are 100% right. He, for someone who is a proponent of digital and like tech touch experiences, he does human to human better than anyone else.
EQ through the roof.
Exactly. All right, Brooke, tell us who you're shouting out.
I have so many, there's like so many people that are doing so many phenomenal things, but I'm going to shout out two, and they're very local to Chicago, but they are both building national brands. So one is Jared Gibson, and he has created this fantastic Too Lazy to Create a Podcast podcast. I don't know if you guys have gotten the chance to see him, but he's a digital
marketer. No, but I want to listen to it purely by the name.
Right. Just to the name, you're just like, damn, I wish I came up with that. But he just followed exactly what he was doing at the time. And he was too lazy to create a podcast. And he just started recording what he was doing. And he made the most out of like the assets and the time that he had. And he has built a phenomenal business around it. I might also add, he's a Clarity University graduate from Jane Agency. So I'm just going to shout that out right there. But he is really helping people get in touch with what they need to be talking about most. And I think that's just phenomenal. And then the second one that I wanted to shout out, when you talk about taking metrics and the financials and what it means to make those two things connect and having a unbelievable touch in customer service and how both human or tech to human really works, John Morris from The Fiscal Advocate is doing an amazing job of building community, culture, conversation, tools, solutions, and lending his life experiences to those who are looking to elevate. He's just doing a fantastic job. And then the last one, which I'm going to sneak in there, is I don't know if you guys are familiar at all with Lucky Orange, but Sean over at Lucky Orange and the whole team at Lucky Orange, it's sort of an addendum onto your website metrics. And I'm not really the tech person, but I'm data like obsessed. They take expansive amounts of data and they curate it in a way that the non-tech can peruse, browse, dig into, and then delve. And so he's just doing a lot to probe into the marketing industry, the technology industry, the financial industry. And then the fourth one I'm going to shout out, which is more on the sales end, is the Two Bobs podcast. It is so awesome. If you haven't touched into it, they have a couple. One phenomenal one that they just did for sales specifically was on anchoring. There's one they did a few years ago. I listen to it every time I go to a major like meeting or conference. It's called The 10 Bits. And it just talks about the 10 things that go on inside the sales process, which goes all the way through to retention. So just a fantastic set. And sorry if I just totally like, you're like a cast a net there, but they're all great, great resources.
I do feel like it's time to announce this is the first episode of the Two Robs podcast. I heard that. And I was
there
like,
we go.
Oh my God. It's been this whole episode of the there Two Robs podcast. So, okay. Last question.
Wait,
I
hold
ask.
On. Two Robs and a Brook.
There you go. No, Two Robs and a Brook. I love it. All right, coming soon to a network near you, Two Robs and a Brook. But I do want to give you a chance. One of the things I love to do is be able to have a chance for people to follow up with you as the guest of this. So in one quick link, where can they find you online if they want to learn more, if they really connected with you, if they just want to talk about what we talked about today or talk about podcasts or, you know, what you had for dinner last night? Where can they find you online?
LinkedIn's the easiest.
Oh, we're all going to do it at the same time.
I'll go first. Go to the Jane Agency, JaneAgency.com website. There's a contact us form. The team responds so fantastically. The collaboration and dialogue starts right there. Or you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm active. I'm a frequent user.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. So my company is called Success Scaled. A lot of S's in there, so watch when you type. but LinkedIn's also nice and easy. I'm trying to LinkedIn detox a little bit right now, just because, you know, we all start every once in a while, but easy place to reach me.
So I can be found at the-isp.org, rob.durant@the-isp.org. I can also be found at salestv.live. We're on summer hiatus, but we'll be starting back up again in September, and we will be talking all things sales live.
Awesome. Well, thank you everyone so much for joining. Thank you for everyone who followed along and gave us comments. We had a really great conversation. Have a great rest of your day. Have a great summer, and we will see you on the other side.